Good morning.
Hope you have a Bible with you. If you do, be turning to Ephesians 6. We'll also touch on Colossians chapter 3 that you heard Mike read from earlier. Last week we were in the book of Job and we talked about lessons that we can learn from all the conversations that take place in the book of Job. And how we can learn from those about our own relationships with each other and how we communicate with each other and also how we communicate with God. This morning, I want us to think still about relationships, but to think about the relationship between parents and children, and specifically some instructions that are given by Paul in Ephesians chapter 6 and Colossians 3. And, you know, one of the things that I think we are blessed as a congregation with is that even though we're small in number, we have a lot of young folks, percentage-wise. And even those of you that don't still have children at home, you have the opportunity to be a big influence on, you know, the next generation that are either your grandchildren or your spiritual grandchildren that are part of this congregation. So we all, you know, we all have a responsibility for, preparing the next generation for being the future, body of Christ. And so we have a blessing, but an awesome responsibility. And so I want us to think about these instructions that Paul gives this morning. So if you go with me to Ephesians 5 first, let's go to chapter 5 first. If you go back to verse 1, and I just want to set the context for what we're going to read in chapter 6. But if you go back to verse 1 of chapter 5, Paul says to be imitators of God. Okay, so that's the kind of first kind of context clue that we get. And then if you go down to verse 15, he says to be careful how you walk. And with that as the context, if you then go down to verse 21, I think it is. Yeah, 21. He says, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. So again, in the context of trying to be imitators of God, being careful how we walk, how we live this life, his instruction is, as members of the body of Christ, that we should submit to each other out of reverence for Christ. He then proceeds to talk about three different types of relationships where he is instructing mutual submission. So the first one of those that comes at the end of chapter 5 is husbands and wives. Then if you flip over to chapter 6, it's parents and children. And then the final one, masters and slaves. And he addresses the same three in Colossians 3 that Mike read this morning. By the way, this is kind of a side thought, but Colossians and Ephesians are very similar. Ephesians written to the Ephesian church that Paul was very familiar with. He was based there for a long time at the beginning of his third missionary journey. But then the Colossian church that he had not visited prior to the writing of that letter, and it contains many of the same things that he wrote to the Ephesian church, but written to a church that he did not know. So just kind of keep that to the side. So there's a lot of very similar themes, even in many cases in the same order as what you read about them in Ephesians. But so the same thought happens in Colossians. But this instruction that he gives for parents and children comes in the midst of these three relationships about how, husbands and wives, parents, children, master, slaves, how in the Lord we are to submit to each other, these two sides of these relationships. And in each case, he takes the party, if you will, that has the least amount of rights in their culture. Okay? Understanding that women were, women had fewer rights in that culture. I mean, that was just a reality. But Paul starts with them, but then moves to the husband to say, you got to submit to each other. Okay, this is not only one side submits. You have to submit to each other. He then moves to children. We'll talk about this in a minute. But children had no rights in Greco-Roman society. And fathers could be absolute dictators of their family. That was an accepted social norm. So he starts off with children, but then moves to fathers and says, hey, no, you have to, again, mutually submit to each other. And then obviously in the third, slaves had no rights. But he explains that both slaves and masters have a responsibility, in which I think we can equate to the, you know, worker, you know, employee, boss relationship today. We each have a responsibility to each other. So anyway, that's the context that we get. But very quickly, the passage that I want us to look at, Ephesians 6, let's just read these four verses together and then we'll come back and talk about them. He says this, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother." And then in parentheses, parenthetical expression, says this is the first commandment with a promise. And this is coming directly from the fifth commandment, from the Ten Commandments. But he says that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land, quoting directly from the Ten Commandments. And then in verse 4, he turns from children to fathers. And he says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." Now, Colossians, which you heard Mike read, he says this in verse 20 of Colossians 3. He says, "Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord." And then in verse 21, "Fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged." Now, the context beyond, we talked about that, you know, being imitators of God, to be careful how you walk, to submit to each other. But then specifically in this relationship between children and parents, notice that he starts off by saying, "Obey your parents in the Lord." So we're talking about a Christian home. Okay, this is how we mutually submit to each other as parents and children in a Christian home. Okay, so keep that in mind. Now, I'm going to start from the end and then work backwards. Okay, by that I mean I'm going to start with fathers or parents. Okay, I was told this morning to focus more on fathers and mothers, but we're going to talk about both. Okay, we're going to talk about both, but Paul singles out fathers, and I'll tell you the reason why in just a minute, why I think he does that. But the last thing that he says is, he says, "Bring them up," meaning speaking to fathers, "bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." And so you've got on your bulletin, you got a bunch of blanks. All of them start with the letter R. If you want to fill them out, great. If you don't want to fill them out, great. Because sometimes I've been told by my children that I'm not very good at pointing out when to fill in a blank and when not to. So sometimes I get lost. You know, I don't preach to the bulletin or the handout. I preach what I think is going to get across. So if I forget to go over a blank, I apologize. But there's a bunch of blanks. They all start with an R. The first thing that I have on there is that with this instruction to bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord, that the responsibility of parents is to guide toward responsibility. Responsibility. And I'm pulling this from that word discipline. Because one of the instructions to the fathers and therefore the parents is to bring up your children in the discipline and instruction. We'll get to instruction in a minute, of the Lord. And by the way, I don't preach this sermon as a parent that has it all figured out. Okay? I'm learning from the instruction of Paul just like all the rest of us are. Okay? But he says, one of your roles is to bring them up in the discipline of the Lord. Now, when I look at that, I think that there are implications of that instruction that apply to a child's physical life and their spiritual life. Okay? Because I believe from a physical standpoint, one of our responsibilities as parents or grandparents is to train our children how to be adults. We have to teach them how to be adults. When they're children, what do they act like? They act like children, right? I mean, I'm sure all of you parents, grandparents, you could tell me stories about the crazy things your kids have done, right? Now, you know, I was thinking when Kate was little, we had to tell her to stop asking strangers for money, you know? She would walk up to strangers at church and ask them for money because she was used to being able to ask her grandparents for money and they'd give her money. And then she'd go ask a stranger for money and be like, "Why are you asking me for money?" Sarah, when she was younger, one of the things that she, I mean, you put her on any apparatus that was designed for sitting, and she would immediately go onto her feet and start jumping. Now, can you imagine me as a 47-year-old, if I went over to the Reed's house and I walked in, they said, hey, have a seat, make yourself at home, and I walked over and just started jumping up and down on the sofa. So somehow I have to train my children how to be adults. You know, when I put down, I think I put this in the handout, I have to train them how to be friendly, respectful, courteous, professional, good stewards, hard workers, empathetic, encouraging, etc. Another thing I thought about, you know, when I was getting ready for this, I remember when Kate, I think, was 5 and Sarah was 1, and I got the flu, and I had 103.4 fever, and Olivia had left the house, was leaving the house to go get me some medicine. And so she said, are you well enough to at least keep the kids from killing each other? And I said, I think so. I said, it was one of those days where Sarah was, she was like content. She was sitting on the floor playing. She was content. I just said, Kate, just don't mess with her. Just don't mess with her. And I sat down in a lazy boy chair, felt terrible, and just am laying there. And I come to, was screaming. You know what I'm about to tell. Screaming. And Kate is trying to reach something in the pantry that's higher than she can reach. And she is trying to use her one-year-old sister as a step stool to reach the thing in the pantry. So again, we have to train them how, you know, to move past that phase before they reach adult. I mean, again, can you imagine me going over to the baker's house and, you know, Jeff says, hey, can you reach for something up on the shelf for me? And I say, Sam, lean down. Let me climb up on top of you and grab hold of that. No, and I don't say that to embarrass them because all kids do stuff like that, right? They all do. They're kids. They should, right? They should. But one of our responsibilities as parents and grandparents is we have to teach them how to be adults, how to be disciplined, how to be hard workers, how to be good stewards with what we have. You know, some point we have to, you know, over time as they mature, we have to teach them how to live in, you know, independent in an adult-driven world. Okay, that's just one of the realities of life, and that's a responsibility in teaching them discipline. Is over time we teach them how to live in this crazy world. But we also, as part of that, have to teach them how to avoid the pitfalls of life. But either ones that we have personally experienced and we know the outcome of it because we've done it, or ones where we've seen that happen to other people. I mean, I wrote down, like, you know, teaching them to avoid drugs and alcohol, materialism, pornography, those kinds of things. We have to teach them how to avoid the things that we know are going to, you know, harm their life. Part of discipline is teaching them what to avoid because we've done it or we've seen it have an impact on others. You know, I'm sure all of us have known people whose lives have been destroyed by drugs and alcohol, have been destroyed by materialism, you know, debt, you know, just debt that's just gone crazy. We've seen those things, and so we do our best to train our children to avoid those things because we know and we've been there, and we don't want them to follow the same things, right? We want them to avoid those things. And part of that also is we have to be the examples. You know, we have to act like grown-ups. We have to act like adults, and we have to avoid those things that we want them to avoid. And all of those things can have eternal implications. You know, it's not just about being an adult for being an adult's sake, but it can have eternal implications because, you know, the temptation is always going to be there to fall into those things that are going to damage our lives. Why? Because they look so good. They look like they're going to bring us happiness. They look like they're going to make us happy. They're going to bring us pleasure. We can't see the outcome. And so what kind of examples are we being for our children? But beyond responsibility, to guide them toward responsibility, the second thing that I have on there is to guide them toward relationship. Relationship. And that's where the discipline and instruction comes in. The discipline and the instruction of the Lord. You know, I wrote down, we have to teach them how to be children of God. We have to help them to learn His Word. We have to, you know, help them ultimately take ownership of their faith. You know, I've talked to you before about how one of the things that I struggled with moving from, you know, youth to adulthood was taking ownership of my faith. You know, I was living on borrowed faith for a long time. And I think as parents and grandparents and others in the church, we can help our children, our young people, take ownership of their faith as they mature, as they become adults, teaching them how to be lights in the world, teaching them, you know, how to live, you know, how to submit to God so that they can live with God for all eternity. You know, helping them have a relationship with God. And again, just like we have to be an example and a guide when it comes to matters of discipline, what kind of an example and a guide are we for our children when it comes to a relationship with God? What do our children see in us? You know, do they see us studying? Do they see us praying? Do they see us being active in the church? Do they see us helping people who are in need, reaching out to people who need encouragement? Do they see those things in our lives? Because they're going to imitate what they see. And if our responsibility is to raise them in the discipline instruction, we have to live it out so they can see it. Because they're going to do what they see in us, which is terrifying. But they're going to do what they see in us. Now, the next thing I have on your handout is this, you know, how do you do it? How do we do that? How do we do, you know, how do we bring them up, guide them toward responsibility and relationship? Well, there's four things, okay? And this is why I think Paul singles out fathers. Because, and I alluded to this a minute ago, in Greco-Roman society, a father was the absolute authority of the house. And a father could socially acceptably behave like a dictator. You know, because children had absolutely no rights until they were of a certain age. So a father was within their social rights to behave like a dictator, like a tyrant towards their children. And Paul here, when he comes back, if you go back to the beginning of verse 4, he says this, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. He's saying you can't behave like a tyrant. You can't behave like a dictator. You have to have a relationship with your children. Okay? This is not, you know, the norm in society. You have to have a relationship with your children. You can't behave, you know, you can't behave like a tyrant. While a parent has a responsibility to set boundaries, to administer discipline, we're not going to be effective in that role if we don't have a relationship. And so, four things that I have in my notes that we have to offer as parents, as part of, you know, as how we raise them in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Here are four things that we need to do rather than provoking them to anger. One, we must offer rapport. R-A-P-P-O-R-T, for those of you that can't spell. Rapport, okay? And by that, you know, I wrote this down. It is critical that we be friends to our children. Now, friends does not always mean that we do everything we do so that they will like us. Sometimes being a friend is doing something that they don't like because they need it, right? But I believe a parent should be the best friend a child has, whether they realize it or not. We need to be their absolute best friend. I heard a preacher one time who was talking on a similar topic. And he said, you know, and I don't say this to make fun of him, but he said something. He said, I don't care if I'm a friend of my child or not, as long as I teach them to do the right thing. And I understand where he was going. He was really kind of getting at, it doesn't matter whether at the end of the day, whether they like me or not. But I can't say it doesn't matter whether they're my friend or not. I have to be the best friend that they have on this earth as a parent. You know, there should be no one who is looking out after their best interest more than me as a parent. And so I need to have a rapport with my children. I need to be close to them where I can, you know, understand what they need, what they're going through. It can't just be a heavy-handed disciplinarian that is distant from children, because then I don't know what they're dealing with. I don't know what they're going through. And so I put down, you know, I highlighted this in my notes. In order to do this, we got to spend time with them, quality time with them. You know, that's part of being, you know, not being one that's a tyrant provoking them to anger, we have to spend quality time with our children. And something that we're all pulled in a million different directions, but we have to prioritize spending time with our children. The second thing I wrote down is that we must offer respect. You say, respect to our children? Yes, respect to our children. And the reason why I say that is because we have to respect their view of life. It's very easy, and I am very guilty of this, when something upsets our children to go, oh, that's a big bunch of nothing. Because we've been through a million things that are a million times worse, right? But it's not worse to them. And so we have to put ourselves on their level and understand that this is a big deal to them. You know, if something happens between them and a friend at school, it's a big deal, okay? It's a big deal from their perspective. So we have to respect their perspective and be empathetic to that. You know, so we have to show them respect. You know, their fears, their stresses, their worries, their problems, they can seem trivial to us, but they are very real to our children. Third thing, reassurance. We must offer reassurance. Parents should be the greatest source of encouragement for their children. We have to be sources of encouragement, building up rather than tearing down. Building up rather than tearing down. And the final thing, we must offer refuge. That's the fourth thing, refuge. We should be a safe haven for our children, for whatever problem they have, whatever they're dealing with. Now, you know, I have to have the rapport. I have to have the respect. I have to have the reassurance before I can be the refuge, before I can be the safe haven. You know, before I can be the person that they bring their, you know, the things that are bothering them, the place where they can feel loved and secure and protected, I have to provide that for them. So again, why do I think he singled out fathers? Because this was not the role of the father in that society. You know, you can be a dictator, you can be a tyrant. And Paul's saying, no, you don't provoke them to anger. You're not there to be a dictator, a tyrant. You are there to have a relationship with your children. You are there to have a relationship with your children. That's how you submit to them. Is you have a relationship with them, and then you show them how to be responsible and how to have a relationship with God. That's your responsibility as parents. Now, let's flip it to the other side. We're going backwards. Okay, we hit verse 4 now. Let's go back to verses 1 through 3. So now we've moved on to the role of children. It says, children, obey your parents. Again, in the Lord. For this is right. Honor your father and mother. The fifth commandment. This is the first commandment with a promise. I think Paul, when he says first commandment there, means this is the foremost commandment that had a promise associated with it. And he says that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. And I'll just make an aside here for just a second. Obviously, when that promise was first given, it has different implications than it does for those later at the time in which Paul wrote Ephesians. When the command was given, what would have lived long in the land mean? Well, we're going towards Canaan, the promised land, right? You know, so the promise, you know, we interpret that promise as we're going to be given a long life in our land if we follow the instruction of our parents. Well, that had long since happened by the time the Ephesian letter was written. So Paul is, you know, has a different perspective on things here. But, you know, children, there's two things that I pull out of what Paul instructs for children, okay? All right, boys and girls, those of you that have fallen asleep, if you fell asleep, now it's your time. You're on the podium, okay? So the two things he says, one, the first one I wrote down is the word respond, okay? The word respond. He simply says, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right, okay? And I wrote this down. Do what they tell you, with understanding that they are trying to guide you toward responsibility and relationship. It is so easy for children to think that their parents are not very smart, right? We all go through that phase, right, where we think our parents, Mom, you don't know anything. Dad, you don't know anything. But one thing, boys and girls, children, young folks, remember that your parents are trying to help you develop responsibility and have a relationship with God. Why do you follow their instruction? Because they want you to have the best. They want you to be the best prepared for your adult life and to have the best relationship with God that you can. So why follow their instruction? because that's the way to navigate life. They're trying to help you navigate this life. And then the second word that I wrote down is the word regard, because he says, honor your father and mother, quoting from the fifth commandment, recognizing their authority and showing them respect. You know, with understanding that they have experienced a lot more things in life than you have. You know, that they have been through a lot, and that there is something you can learn from them. You know, live the way they are teaching you, even when your parents are not around. Now, I want you to, if you got a second, if you don't mind, go with me to two passages, okay? Even those of you that are younger, if you have access to a Bible, I want you to go with me to two passages, okay? These are in the New Testament, and these are both from the writings of Paul. And both of these are listings of sinful activities, okay? The first one comes in Romans chapter 1. In Romans 1, Paul is talking about the Gentile world and the evil that was part of the Gentile world. And the point he's trying to make is that everybody, all Gentiles, are under sin, they're worthy of death. That there's nobody that can claim to be righteous or holy, they're all sinners. But I want you to look at this list of sins. This is Romans 1, verse 28. It says, since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, again talking about the Gentile world, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They were full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil. And what's the next one? Disobedient to parents. How did that make the list? How did that make the list along with all those other sins? Now go with me to 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3. While you're turning there, Paul here is talking to Timothy about the, you know, in the last days, which we're in the last days, in the last period in which the way in which God is going to deal with mankind through his Son, through the Spirit. And Paul says this in 2 Timothy 3, beginning in verse 1. He says, understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty. For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive. And there it is again. Disobedient to parents. And yeah, I'm not going to read the rest of this to you, but you can, you know, you can read all these things that are going to characterize the people who are there in the last days. Why is disobedient to parents in the middle of these lists of sinful activities, sinful natures? Because in the context of being in the Lord, your parents are trying with everything that they have to put you on a path toward a relationship with God that will allow you to receive a gift of glory for all eternity. And if you turn your back on them, more than likely you're turning your back on God. And if you're turning your back on God, you're turning your back on everything. And that's why that's in that list. That's why being disobedient to parents is right there along with, you know, along with envy and murder and strife. And I mean, that's the same, that's as bad as murder. Well, if you turn your back on God, you're turning your back on everything. And if it's a Christian home, your parents are most likely trying to help you have a relationship with God. And that's why you should listen to them. That's why you should follow their example and follow their instruction. That's why you should, you know, respond when they give you instruction. That's why you should hold them in high regard, because they are trying to help you learn to have a relationship with God. We each have a responsibility in this relationship. But young people, as much as your parents are trying to help you have that relationship, to help you build your life on a solid foundation. You remember 2 weeks ago, we did the lesson on the wise man and the foolish man. And you got the wise man who built his house on the rocks and the foolish man who built his house on the sand. And I asked the question at the end of that, why would someone choose to build their life on the foundation of sand? Why would they choose to do that? As much as your parents are trying to help you have a relationship with God, the world and Satan out there is going to be trying every second of every day to get you to build your life somewhere else. And going to be telling you constantly that no matter what your parents say, no matter what your brothers and sisters in Christ say, that's not the way you're happy. That's not the way you're successful. That's not the way you're content. They're going to be trying to tell you that, you know what, if you're really going to be happy, if you're really going to be content, if you're really going to be successful, here's all the things you need. Here's all the things you need to do. And they're going to keep putting things out in front of you. And it's going to be subconscious. You're not going to be going, hey, let me map out a plan for how I'm going to be happy. It's going to happen to you subconsciously. And that's why we choose to build our lives somewhere else, because we buy into that lie. And I'm not immune to it. You're not immune to it. But that's why it's important to follow the instruction of your parents, because they are trying to help you build your life on that good, solid foundation. Yes, it's harder. Yes, it means you've got to kind of put away human nature. You've got to work hard to build on a rock foundation. But it's going to hold. That sand that's out there that Satan's trying to throw at you every day is not going to hold. And you're going to constantly be frustrated and constantly looking for what's next and what's going to make you happy. It's going to be a never-ending game that you're going to play with yourself. And so, again, in this relationship, we each have a responsibility to each other. To have, you know, to be the type of Christian home that God wants us to be. Parents, we have a responsibility. Children, you have a responsibility. But if we fulfill that responsibility, you know, we'll have a great relationship with our children. We'll also be preparing them for not just for adulthood, but for eternity, to be able to receive that gift of God that we all want to receive. If you're here this morning and you've never made that commitment to Christ, and you know what you need to do, you know that you need to make the decision that you need to be baptized, why wait another day? Why wait another day? Not only is family life better when you're in the Lord, but all of life is better when you're in the Lord, because you have something that's not going to change that you can put your hope and your trust in. Without that, the world is going to throw you around, toss you about. Why not make that commitment to Christ today? If you're here this morning and you need the prayers of the congregation, you need anything that we can do for you, encourage you, please come while we sing our invitation song.